Voila, you're in the right place. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. This is The Truth About Sales. I am your host today, Joel Rico, and welcome back. So last week, we just did some setup. We did some admin. We did a little introduction. We talked a bit about getting into rapport. We spoke about how people listen, and we set up a self-critique exercise called the 360 review. The intention of that exercise is for us to identify our blind spots, right? These are the things that other people notice that are invisible to you. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Today, because we know that all decisions, let me say that again, all decisions, every decision, are actually value judgments. This week, we're going to delve into the construct of values, how we got them, where they came from, whether or not they're serving us, how they control us, how they control buying habits. And we're going to learn a really quick process on how to elicit values from our clients. Super easy. And as when we know our values that our clients have, then it becomes very easy to help them and to work in harmony with their value system. So this exercise of eliciting their values is predicated on our ability to listen. So this process that we're doing today also includes a listening exercise that will give you deep insights and simultaneously bond the client to you. Remember, the number one complaint against salespeople across all industries is the salesperson didn't listen. So we're going to kill two birds with one stone today, values exercise and an active listening exercise. What else? During our time today, you will experience a new way of connecting with people. You'll get the step-by-step guide on how to actively listen. That means feed back to your client that you heard them. It'll help you remember. It'll help clarify. It'll bond the client to you. So that's what we're up to today. So before we get up to some new stuff, let's check in with some of you. So how was the exercise that you did this week? So I left you all with an exercise called the 360 review. This is a self-critique exercise where we literally interview other people about their experience of being around you. What's it like to be around you? How do people feel after they talk to you? What's a conversation with you like for them? And so how was that for you? How many did you do? What did you get? I want to say one other thing about that really briefly is if you, let's say you did five of these, that'd be awesome if you did five. So let's say you did five and one person had something to say that was challenging for you. One person had a beef. One person had a problem. One person had something really negative to say. Well, okay, great. Maybe that's a problem with that one person. Maybe that was a breakdown with that one person. Maybe there's one thing you need to clean up with that one person. And you should. And that wasn't the intention of this exercise. The intention was to find out the things that show up in all your conversations. So what we're really looking for is 4 out of 5 people said, you interrupt them so much that they can't get a word in edgewise. 4 out of 5 people said, you seem to like to argue more than you like to solve. Right? That's what I'm looking for. And I'm sure that people said nice things about you. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in your life. And those nice things may or may not be helpful. It's awesome to get a pat on the back and a warm hug, and I don't learn anything from that. So the real breakthrough on this exercise is, what did you learn about yourself? What showed up for you in doing this exercise? So let's jump in. You may unmute your phone by pressing star and then 6. It'll unmute you and pull you into the queue. When you're done, please star 6 again, and it'll remute you so we don't have to hear your background noise. And in order to do this, would you pretty please, for me and for everybody else in the group, when you ask a question, star six your phone and then state your name so everybody knows who you are. I'd like to get us as connected as possible. So I'm going to shut up now. Star six on your phone. Come tell me what you got out of doing this exercise, please. And don't all speak at once. Somebody gets to go first. Or maybe I should pick somebody to go first.
Hi, Joel. It's Douglas.
Hello, Douglas.
Do I really have to do this?
Do you really have to do what?
Tell you what one of my friends said.
Well, you don't have to, but I can tell by your tone that you learned something.
Well, it was kind of painful. You know, I have a lot of friends, and they say really nice sugar-coated things.
Yeah.
And when it came time let's get down and dirty, they couldn't do it because they said they didn't know me well enough. But they do. You know,
they do.
And one of my dear friends said that I live in denial.
Oh. You know,
that I do whatever I want to do when I want to do it, and I think I'm doing something else.
Mm.
Ouch.
Okay. And so, well, the fact that you're saying ouch tells me that part of that resonates with you as true.
Part of it. And yeah.
Okay, so was that good feedback for you?
Tremendous. It was great.
Yeah. Okay, and so how is this costing you? And it may not be the way in which your friend said it, may not be the way in which you would say it. How would you say it? Your friend says you're living in denial. How would you describe that characteristic?
God, this is good stuff, Joel. Okay, because I see it a couple of different ways.
Yeah.
And between my ears, I've been living in poverty and in pain. And then I got my W-2s back. I was like, what the hell? I made this much last year? I thought I made like $35,000 last year. I made way over $100,000, and I didn't know it.
Wow.
You know, that's just, it's like my mindset is poverty. And it's like, God, I got to stop this.
Okay, good. Because, so there's a couple of pieces I'm hearing here, Doug. So one is, that one person in your life says, hey, you're living in denial, and you said, ouch, as if that were a negative. And then the example that you gave me was very positive. You said, I'm in denial that I'm making any money, and look at this, I'm making a bunch of money. So here's the question. So how is it that this feedback that you got from somebody else, hey, Douglas, you're some parts of you are living in denial. How is it that now that you see this, that you can use this to your betterment? How is this going to help you now that you see it?
Well, it comes back to other conversations I've had with you, Joel, in regards to make 20 contacts a day, you know, and I keep making that the goal. And then when I review my entire last year, I probably made a total of less than 100 contacts in the year, and I still came out with over six figures, or a six-figure income. And it's like, what am I doing? I'm the only one destroying me. No one else is.
So, knowing that you made 100 contacts last year, Doug, if you put the pedal to the floor, you could make 100 contacts a week.
Yes.
I know people that do 100 contacts a day. My friend Jim Sullivan that makes 100 contacts every day. So if you did 100 contacts a week, that means you would take what you made last year and multiply it by 50. Just a suggestion. All right, Doug, thanks for sharing that, man. Thank you very much.
No, thank you for the exercise.
Yep, bravo. Anybody else? What did you get from this exercise? What did you learn about yourself? Anybody have anything they'd like to share? And again, like Douglas, I'm looking for the dirt. You know, if you say, oh, my friend said I'm amazing. Okay, great. Great. You didn't learn anything from that. So what did you learn?
Hey, Joe, this is Jimmy Howie.
Hi, Jimmy.
Yeah, one of the things that came to my mind, one of the my past clients, or a good friend of mine, said I was not on time.
Not on time.
Yes.
Good. This is a big, big deal in sales. This is one of my big deals, too. If you guys haven't noticed this by now, this class starts exactly on time. Exactly. So, Jimmy, how is that getting in the way of your business and your life? How's that a problem?
Well, I try as much as possible to be on time. I was just shocked, you know, that this came through.
Well,
you know,
so you can try to be on time and still not be on time. So what is it costing you, Jimmy, by being late for things? What's it costing you?
I'd probably say costing me money, number one. Number two, it probably cost me my integrity.
Yeah, well, I would say integrity would be your number one, and money is a result of integrity being out.
Yeah.
So in the realm, this is a big, big, big deal, Jimmy. In the realm of sales, what you're asking people to do, especially in real estate, you're asking people to trust you with the largest asset they have, their largest investment, their biggest asset. You're asking them to trust you. One of the ways that you can demonstrate to people that you are trustworthy is to be your word. And if you said you're going to be there at 11 o'clock, then you should be there at 11 o'clock. If you show up at 11:05, you're already demonstrating that you're not good for your word. Do you see how this is going to just have a ripple effect through your business? So, Jimmy, what can you do? What action can you take now to make sure that you're on time for everything? What can you do about that?
Well, one thing I probably should do is to leave home earlier. Sometimes I try to blame it on the traffic, which sometimes it is. I thought I can make the distance within maybe 30 minutes or 45 minutes. Then I run into traffic, and then it costs me more than my time estimation is longer than I planned.
Yeah. All right. So I have two very powerful things to share with you, and they're not just for Jimmy, everybody. And Jimmy, you're definitely going to want to write this down. So two things here. The way the world operates is we make commitments. I'll be there at 11 o'clock, and we do our best to keep them. The moment you realize that you're not going to be there by 11 o'clock, you're stuck in traffic, there's an accident on the highway, the moment you realize, I'm not going to make it, pick up the phone and call and say, I know I said I'd be there by 11, it's only 10:15, it's a 45-minute drive, but there's traffic, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to make it. The moment you think that you're not going to be able to keep your commitment, call, renegotiate. Be in communication. Be proactive about it. That's the way the world works. We make promises. We do our best to keep them. If you keep them, great. If you can't keep them, clean it up. Take responsibility for it. All right, I want to say one more thing about that because you brought up traffic. I lived in LA for a while, and I had people that were constantly showing up to work saying, oh, hey, Joel, sorry I'm late. There was traffic. Right, it's LA, there's always traffic. So there's two ways to look at this. One way is good for you and one way is bad for you. So is this true? Hey, I'm sorry I'm late, there was a bunch of traffic. Well, that's true, there was a bunch of traffic and you are late, it is true. And it's victim language. There's nothing you could, I'm sorry, there's nothing I could do about it. Nothing I could do, there was traffic. What could you do? Well, you're already late, so the only thing you can do is take responsibility for it. Maybe something like, hey, I'm really sorry that I'm late. I didn't allow enough time to compensate for the traffic. Now, consider, you're still late. However, in this example, you're empowered. Now there's something you can do about it. If you say, oh, I'm sorry, there was an accident on the 405, you are speaking your own disempowerment versus, hey, sorry, I'm late. I didn't leave enough time to deal with this crazy traffic. You're speaking your own empowerment. So speak your own empowerment. Speak options in. Speak in ways that give you power. Awesome. Awesome, Jimmy. Anybody else? Let's do one more. Anybody else have a breakthrough, something cool you got out of this exercise? What did you learn? What feedback did you get?
Hi, this is Alexis.
Hey, Alexis.
Hey there.
Hey there.
So the feedback that I got that kind of surprised me was that I am inconsistent. So sometimes I show up really present and engaged, and I'm reliable and involved. And then other times I'm just kind of checked out or unavailable. And that quality has a couple people feel like I'm unreliable.
Did you get any, that's good feedback. Did you get any clarification on when you're reliable and when are you unreliable? And any other details in there?
It usually has to do with if I'm dealing with some kind of personal issue. So the feedback was something like, you know, when things are good for you, then you show up really pretty well. And then when things are not so good for you, then you're not really around.
So you show up on time and get it done on schedule. But if it's some personal thing you're dealing with that you're avoiding and hiding.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, good. I'm glad to get the feedback, but it was painful to hear because it wasn't in my. It was a different perception than I had of how I show up for people.
And was it helpful? Is it nice to know that this is the way you show up for people sometimes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And same comment that I made for Doug. The fact that you said, "Oh, that stings. Ooh, ouch, that stings a bit." Tells me that there's some truth in it. If it didn't sting at all, either you're a crazy psychopathic narcissist or it's not true.
Right.
So the fact that it stings a little bit tells me that there's some truth in it for you. So you know what they say in like Alcoholics Anonymous, like you can't make any progress at all until you realize you have a problem. So the goal of this whole exercise was to raise our consciousness about how we are in the world. So Alexis, what can you do positively to shift this? Or is just knowing about it enough to have you show up differently?
Yeah, I think just even having the awareness that this is happening and this was obviously a blind spot for me will at least get the ball rolling to make that kind of change. And beyond that, I think it's something I'll have to just sit with to just keep observing my behavior and making an effort even when withdrawing feels like, you know, the instant, that's just kind of how it's always been. So when I feel that tendency to withdraw or not really show up fully, then I'm recognizing it and making a new plan of behavior.
Awesome. Great job. The key here for everybody, especially those of you that just shared, the key here is awareness. So when you're aware of this, you now have power to be conscious of it, to do something about it. There's a huge difference between being, let's choose an emotion, being upset and feeling like, wow, I'm really upset. There's a big difference between realizing, wow, I feel a lot of anger versus being angry. The only difference there is one of them you're aware of. There's a difference between crying and being sad and saying, wow, whew, I feel a whole lot of sadness. Right? The key here is, are you aware of how you're showing up? Are you aware of the impact that you're having on other people? So
that
bravo,
actually,
everybody.
That was, you said something important, the impact, because I realized that my intentions are usually good, but one of the mm-hmm. one person that gave me feedback said, I don't think you realize the impact you have when you do this, even though mm-hmm. you know, you may have good intentions, you might want to look at what impact that you're having on others.
Well, one of my beliefs is that all human beings are doing the best they can. We always have good intentions. Right? I might not agree with those intentions. Like, some people think that beating their children is good because it makes a disciplined child, and how else are they going to learn? I'm so committed that this child grew up to be this way that I'm willing to inflict this punishment to make sure, I'm so committed that they turn out this way, I'm willing to beat them into this submission. Now, while I don't agree with that philosophy, their intentions are good. So what do they say? The road to hell is paved with good intentions. So intentions, there's more than intentions. The real measure, one of my favorite quotes, the real measure of any communication is in the response that you get, regardless of your intention. So if we think that we're, you know, being awesome and friendly and engaging, and yet other people think that you're being a jerk, the question is, are you being friendly and engaging, or are you being a jerk? Well, according to everybody else, you're being a jerk. Doesn't matter what your intentions are, right? That's the power of this exercise, is my intentions and how other people receive me are not always the same. So awesome work, everybody. Fantastic. Fantastic. Anybody else dying to share something, or should we move on to the next thing? Anybody else just biting their tongue because something's so important you got to share it? Going once, going twice? All right. Let's do a new thing. So pretty much every week, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to do a little bit of review on what we did the last week to make sure that we clear up any questions. I want to make sure that everybody's caught up. And we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about rapport. Rapport, remember, rapport is the state of being characterized by trust and responsiveness. And how do we make that happen quickly? How do you make that happen with a stranger? How do you make that happen with somebody who's upset? How do you bridge that gap? So that's a prime focus. Rapport is the foundation upon which all the language patterns and the language tools and the techniques and response patterns, they work. In the realm of rapport, what you're learning in this course is utter magic. Without rapport, all the stuff that you're learning in this course is completely useless. Without rapport, nothing works. So we're going to spend, I don't know, 10 minutes in every class talking about constructing rapport. So here it is for this week. In the realm of rapport, people communicate a certain way. And we recognize our friends and our family and our tribe by how they communicate. So imagine 100,000 years ago when we were tribes people, how is it that one tribe, you know, like if you look at early man, you go way back to the beginnings of spoken language. It was they say it was in the Denisovan period, 100, 150,000 years ago, when we human beings, first Denisovans, early humans, started speaking. And yet even back then, there was tribal conflict. So how is it that one tribe would see another tribe, and how would they know? Is this guy my tribe or not my tribe? Is this guy my friend or not my friend? How do they know? Well, rapport. They could look at each other from a distance. They could look at each other and they could say, well, he's wearing the same paint and the same skins and the same feathers and whatever they wore. They look like my tribe. They were dressing the same. And when they started to speak, they'd say, oh, well, they speak my language. Oh, look at that. He's from my tribe. They look the same. They act the same. They talk the same. Ah, must be my tribe. Must be my family. Welcome. Come on in. And they look different. They act different. They speak different. They move differently. They speak a different language. They have a different dialect. All of a sudden, all these caution flags start going off. Who's that? Who are you? Stranger, what are you doing here? I should protect myself. So, like it or not, this is hardwired into our DNA. You go into the grocery store, and there's a guy ahead of you wearing a leather jacket with a purple mohawk and a safety pin through his nose. How do you feel about that? You start thinking, who's that? What the heck? What? Right? When somebody shows up very differently from us, we automatically start to protect ourselves because they're different. It's hardwired in the human experience. So what do we do about that? Well, in any communication, right, that's two people, there's going to be some differences. And one of those people is going to be a little bit uncomfortable. So I'm recommending that you volunteer in sales. You volunteer for the position to be the one who's a little bit uncomfortable. So how do you do that? Well, you give up the hallucination that the way in which you communicate is the right way. It's not the right way. It's just your way. It's family's way, your tribe's way. It's your way. And the way they communicate is their way, their family's way, their tribe's way. And so just for fun, we're going to give up that our model of communicating is right, and we're going to communicate in their model of communicating. And each week we're going to take on another slice of this game. This week, I'd like you to focus on speed. This week, focus only on how fast or slow people speak. Now, consider, we've all had this experience at some point. Let's say you're out at a store, you're going to buy something, and you walk in the store, and the salesperson says, hi, welcome to Fred's Electronics. Come on in. You want a TV, a radio, a DVD player, a CD player? What can I do for you today? Come on in. Sit down right here. Do you want a color TV, a black and white TV? So this guy's speaking much faster than you. Here's the question. Do you trust them? No. Why not? They're speaking so quickly, they're not enrolling me into the conversation. It's a monologue, it's not a dialogue. They're talking over me, they're interrupting me, they're trying to dominate the conversation. I don't trust them, I'm protecting myself already. All that, maybe the guy just had too much coffee, I don't know. All of that comes from just speaking faster than your listener. And then consider the opposite of this. Right? You're in a hurry. You roll into a store. You need to buy something quick. You're zipping into Office Max to get some toner. You got a big contract out, and your printer ran out of toner, and you got to go get toner, and you're in a hurry, and it's on your lunch break, and you run in there, and you go, I need some toner for a HP 348 printer. Where can I get the toner? And the guy in the store says, well, we have several different brands of toner. We have the HP toner in the factory container, and we have our house brand toner. It's much cheaper. I can get you a really good, right? And you're freaking out because you're late. What's your judgment about this guy? He's not paying attention. He's moving too slow. He's not sharp enough to keep up with you. You got stuff to do. All of this information is conveyed just on speed. So your home play assignment number one. I like to call them home play because homework isn't fun. Home play, the more fun you have with this, the faster you'll learn. So your home play assignment number one for this week is in every conversation that you have, notice how fast or slow are they speaking and speak the same speed. Match their speed. If they talk really, really fast and talk really fast with them, okay, no problem. Toner, it's right over here. Come on with me. The faster they talk, the faster you talk. Now, the goal here is to match their speed for about a minute. And what happens in that first minute is they realize you're part of their tribe. You speak to them as if you're part of the tribe and they're part of your tribe. And you speak their language, whether it's really, really fast or really, really slow, whatever it is. You speak their language with them. And if this is how they speak, then speak this way with them. They will add you to their tribe. You'll get in rapport. You'll be in the inner loop. And then after about a minute, you're going to forget about this game. And once it feels good, because rapport feels good, when it feels good, you are going to relax and just migrate into your normal speed, and they will follow you. And the two of you will find a rapport equilibrium very quickly. Stay in equilibrium as long as they stay. And as soon as they break and they go back to really, really fast or they go back to really, really slow, then match them again. And do that in your conversations just to feel it. Notice what happens to your conversations. If you take this exercise on during, if you're doing cold lead generation calls, and you take this exercise on, you might find that some people won't let you off the phone. It feels so good that some people are going to want to keep speaking to you. All right, any thoughts? I have one more part of that to share with you. Any more thoughts or questions about the rapport game for this week? All right, really easy.
Joel?
Match, yes.
Can I just say something about what you just taught us?
Sure, briefly, please.
Okay, I just wanted to let you know that, you know I've been a magician for some time. Mm-hmm. And when my whole magic became better, when I went from good to great, was when I would slow myself down and match the energy of the room. And then I would ask them what their opinion of magic was, and I'd get a clear understanding of what people knew. And when they knew that I was right there with them with the same energy, then I'd ask them if they'd like to see something. And then they were so willing to accept it. And what I was doing before was I was walking out in front of them and saying, look what I can do, look what I can do, look what I can do. And the response was, oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think you're hitting the nail on the head. First of all, what Doug's talking about is much more difficult. He's talking about getting in rapport with a giant group of people. That's much more challenging. However, the point is the same. What most of us do, right, most of us, not all, this class is beautifully diverse. We have several people here not in real estate, which I love. However, most of us sell real estate, and most real estate agents make the fatal mistake when they go on a listing presentation is they think it's a presentation. They go in and they say, just like what Doug said, they go in, let me show you what I can do. Let me give you my dog and pony show. Look at what I can do and look at me and look at me and let me show you this. Right? It's not connected. It's not in rapport. It's not client-centric. So what Doug realized in his magic trick was, in his magic show, was audience-centric. It's all about the customer. Awesome. Awesome. All right, so that's the rapport game. Match their speed. If they're slow, talk slow. If they're fast, talk fast. Do it for about a minute. 30 seconds to a minute's enough, and then you'll find a beautiful space of equilibrium. All right, one more thing. If you want the bonus game, if you really want a huge breakthrough in how to do this and your ability to connect with people, then here's the bonus game. The bonus game comes with caveats. Caveat number one, don't do this for everybody. Do this to one person one time. Right? The rapport game is match everybody, every conversation. The bonus round is one person, one time. The whole experience takes 15 seconds. It's going to be very uncomfortable. In your travels, when you run into somebody who speaks much, much faster than you, or maybe much, much slower than you, then just for 10 or 15 seconds, do the opposite. And by the way, this has to be a stranger, not a friend, not a client, has to be a stranger. So for example, you're waiting in line at your favorite caffeine dispensary to get your bucket of sugar and caffeine, right? There's a big line of people waiting to get their bucket of sugar and caffeine. And the guy at the cash register is going much, much faster than the person behind the machine. They can ring you up faster than the person can make the drinks. And so the person making the drinks, who's also hopped up on sugar and caffeine, leans over and points at you and says, yeah, yeah, you in the black suit. Yeah, what can I get started for you? Just for fun. I think I'll have a venti. What's a venti? Right? And the person is going to freak out. Not just because they're frustrated, but because they're going to look at you like your special needs because you're not keeping up. And you're going to feel their discomfort. And you are going to feel discomfort also because you're destroying rapport. So the rapport destroying exercise, just do it for 10 or 15 seconds. And then note how uncomfortable it is and what happens to you. Do you get nervous? Do you get dry mouth? Do you get anxiety? Do you get an upset stomach? Notice what happens to you. Then immediately fix it. And that when you feel the barista like freaking out, say, oh, sorry, give me a cappuccino doppio. Thank you. Fix it. Get in rapport quick and see what happens. Feel how uncomfortable it is to be out of rapport. And then notice how instant and effortless it is to create it again. It comes back instantly. By the way, if you're losing sales, it's because of this. The more early you're able to recognize rapport being out, the quicker you'll be able to solve it in your sales presentations. Most of us, when we lose the sale, it doesn't mean we lost the sale. It means we lost the customer, which means we lost the sale. All right. We have a bunch to cover. Any questions, thoughts, anything about that before we jump into the next thing? We're going to jump into values right now. Thoughts, questions, comments, anything at all?
I do.
Okay. Alexis.
Really quick, how can you apply this to public speaking when you're addressing a large group of people that may have a completely different method of communication from one to the next?
Yeah, that's a whole different thing that sadly there's not time to take that on in this course. And here we're talking about one or two people at a time. If you're doing a presentation to a couple of people, then you want to get in rapport with each one individually. So you might have a husband that speaks loud and fast and a wife that speaks slow and cautiously. So you want to match each of them independently. Over the course of a group, there's a whole different series of exercises, and sadly we're not covering that. Sorry.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy to tell you about it, but we definitely don't have time for it today. But I don't know. Ask me again when we're not late on time, and I'll share some tips with you.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Yep.
Joel?
Cool. Douglas, quickly, very quickly, we're late.
Yeah, whoever asked that question, they're welcome to call me because I can share some things too. Because I remember where the change came.
Alexis, right. I'm happy to put you in touch with Douglas Converse. You can find him on my webpage, and he's a realtor magician, and he can share some things too.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. So at the beginning of the call, I opened up and said all decisions are value judgments. What does that mean? It means that we make decisions based on what we think is important. So a few questions for you to ponder. Where did you get your values? Well, from the people who housebroke you. Whoever indoctrinated you as a child gave you their values. If you were raised in a Muslim country, you were probably raised to believe the Muslim faith. If you're raised in a Jewish country, you were raised to believe in Jewish doctrine. If you were raised in a Christian, right? See how it works? We adopt the beliefs of whoever housebroke us. So questions, though, is which of your values are serving you and which of your values are not serving you? The real question is, how do you know if your values are good or if they're skewed? How do you know? Like, I think I make good value decisions. I have the right values. I make ethical decisions. How do I know? There was a time about 150 BC in ancient Rome when they used to have gladiator fights to the death. And they used to literally feed people to the lions in front of the crowd. Right, that was public sport. So imagine in the crowd, excuse me, that there's a family and they brought their children for the first time. This is a big time, the big show, the big stadium, the big event. And the kids got to see the lions and the tigers and the chariot races and the fights. And the kids at the end of the day said, this was amazing. Can we come next week to see people get eaten by lions? So the question is, are these like horrible, murderous, schizophrenic, psychopathic children? No, they're normal children that were raised inside a skewed value system. So how does that affect us? Is our clients are making their decisions based on their values, and we don't know what those values are. If we knew what those values were, it would be very easy to help people if we knew the values through which they were making their decisions. So, by the way, a little quote from your handout, when the things we do and the way we behave match our values, life feels good. When our behavior and our life don't align with our values, things feel wrong. Our values guide all of these. So because our clients are using values to make their decisions, the better we become at finding out their values, the easier it is to make a difference for the clients. So very easy. There's the next piece on your handout says determining clients' core values. There's three questions. Sometimes I only get the first two. And it's my intention to always get all three. So I want to ask the client these questions. Let's say, for example, I'm selling real estate, which I am. And the client says, we want to sell this house and buy a smaller one. Great, really common. So most of us are going to say, great, I can help you do that. Where would you like to buy the smaller one? What do you owe on this one? Yes, let's make that happen. Before I get there, I'd like to determine the client's value judgments, value position. I want to know which values are they using to make this decision. So I'm going to ask these three questions. Great. I'd love to make that happen for you. I'm curious. What's important to you about selling this house and downsizing to a smaller house? And they say whatever they say. Well, I have a $6,000 a month payment on this house. I'd like to retire. I don't really need 5,000 square feet. The kids are gone, and it would just be nice to take a load off. I could live smaller and more simply. Great. So I know what's important to them about making this move. It's not a neighborhood. It's not a view. It's to simplify, to minimize, to undo their monthly load. Great. Now, question number two, I'm going to feed them back their answers, and I'm going to say, so what would having a more simple life and a much, much smaller house payment, what would that do for you? Right now we're getting a little deeper, and they're going to say, oh, wow, that would take a bunch of stress off. It would free up my time. I could travel. I wouldn't be maintaining this giant house in the yard and cleaning it. Ugh. it would just simplify my life and give me more options. I could do the things I like, get my life back. Great. Now I know even deeper what's driving their behavior. Question number three is, so ultimately, what would it mean for you if you got your time back and you unloaded all this financial stress and you could travel and live the life that you wanted to live instead of being a slave to this house payment? Ultimately, what would that mean for you? Now, don't be surprised if you get an emotional response right here. And the client might say, oh, God, I could finally relax. Oh, I could get my life back. I could finally be happy. Oh, my God, I could actually retire. Right? Now that the client says, oh, I could get my life back. Oh, I wouldn't have this ulcer. Right, now we're getting to the real motivation. Now, two things just happened. Number one, you found out the real value, the core values upon which this client is basing their decisions. And maybe for the first time out loud, the client got to speak up their goals and dreams and desires out loud because somebody cared enough to ask. And maybe it's the first time they said them out loud. Now, thinking about this conversation, did asking these three questions, did it help your relationship with the client? Oh, you better believe it. This bonds the client to you like you wouldn't believe. All right, let me rip through this example number one, then we'll Q&A. So let's do the opposite one. Somebody says, we need a bigger house. And we say, great, happy to help you do that. I'm curious, what's important about having a larger house? And they say, well, you know, we'd really like each child to have their own room. Right? Always respond in the affirmative. Great, that would be awesome, and I'd love to help you make that happen. I'm curious, what would it do for you for each child to have their own room? Right? So a little deeper. We want each kid to have their own room. Great, let's go find a 5-bedroom house. No, not yet. What would it do for you for each child to have their own room? Now, we're getting a little deeper behind their motivation. They might say, well, my wife has a degree in child behavior, blah, blah, blah. Research shows that kids who have their own room develop a stronger sense of self. They grow into autonomous adults. They have better conflict resolution, blah, 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 all these reasons. It's all about their children. The question number three, we're going to repeat all that back and say, ultimately, what would it mean to you if each of your children grew up into being excellent adults with strong sense of self, autonomy, right, whatever they said back? Now we're at the deep level. The client's going to say, that would mean that we fulfilled our role of being awesome parents and that we've given our children the best possible start they could possibly have in life. Our children mean everything to us. Right, so remember, a bigger house isn't about space. More bedrooms isn't about square footage. It's about whatever it's about. In this case, it's about the development of their children. Most of us are so quick to like, I want to close the sale, get in, sign my contract, let me tell you how great I am. We miss all of this. This is the juice. This is the thing that has people think, wow, my realtor is unbelievable. The salesperson really cares about me. Now, it doesn't matter what you're selling. Also in this class is a gentleman who sells lots of commercial packaging. The same thing. What's important to you about having a box that doesn't break? Oh, my gosh. We'd save money. We'd save downtime. We wouldn't have spilled product. It wouldn't back up the assembly line. Great. And what, you know, ultimately, what would that do for you? Just, you know, if we could save you, he told me this story that somebody had 20%, 1 in 5, packages were failing. What would it do for you to save 20% of your packaging and all the product that got damaged from the broken packaging and all the time backing up the line for things that are breaking? What would that do for you? Wow, it would save us 20% of our production costs. It would change the way we show up in our clients. We wouldn't have to be replacing so much broken product. Great. And what would what would ultimately, what would it mean for you? You could be the one responsible for a 20% boost in profit. Ultimately, what would that mean for you? God, I'd be a champion. I'd get a raise. I'd get a promotion. Right? So as we dig down a little bit, we find the real thing that's driving people. I don't just want to sell them something. I want to really get clear on what their issue is so we can solve the right issue. All right, I have one more trick up my sleeve for you, but questions, comments. What do you think of this so far? Do you think this will be helpful? And do you feel comfortable asking these three questions? Remember, what's important about, what would that do for you, and what would that mean for you? Any questions, any thoughts, any ahas? Nope, no questions, no thoughts. All right, we have one more. There's one more example in there. Example number two, what's important about living at the lake full time? You guys can do that on your own. There's another piece. This is especially true if you're competing. If you are competing against another provider, for example, you're a real estate agent and they're interviewing listing agents they haven't yet decided. You're selling cars and they haven't decided which salesperson they're going to use or which car they're going to choose. You're selling packaging. They don't know if they're going to keep their old vendor or they're going to interview three new vendors. They're going to talk to five appraisers. They haven't decided who they're going to use yet. This is extraordinarily helpful right there. People make decisions based on their decision-making process, and different people have a different process. Now, I personally, I like cars, so I'm going to use a car example. Me personally, Joel Rico, I'm kind of a nerdy engineer type. So before I buy a car, I read all the stuff. I read the stuff online. I read consumer reports. I'll go test drive three or four cars. I'll talk to my insurance company and say, well, what if I buy this car? What would my rates do on this car? What would my rates do on that car? I call my mechanic and go, tell me, what do you think about this car? Is it broken a lot? Is it not broken a lot? Like, I do an insane amount of homework, and I read everything, and I interview people, and I drive a few of them, and I get the brochure, and I sit it on my coffee table, and I, you know, it's a profit, you know, my last car, I've had it for 10 years, I love it, I made the right decision, because I do that quick. A good friend of mine just bought a car, and I said, hey, great car, I'm curious, how did you happen to choose this car? And she said, oh my God, I just saw this blue. This, it's like the color of the ocean. I had to have it. That's it. So we have a very different process on how we buy. So how do you know how somebody makes that process? Well, I'm simply going to ask them. If I'm in an appointment, I'm going to ask them, hey, I see you have a new car in the driveway. Or, hey, I'm curious. How is it that you chose, do you buy stocks? Sure, I have a little money in the market. How do you know when you found the right stock to buy? And they say whatever they say. I do my homework. I read the actuary tables, or, you know, I flip a coin, or I use a Ouija board. Whatever. I don't have any problem with anything that they're using. I just want to know what methodology they're using. And I say, okay, great. So how did you decide on the last stock that you bought? Well, I used the Ouija board. Okay, how did you choose the two or three, and how many stocks did you choose between? Well, I narrowed it down to three. How did you narrow it down to the first three? Oh, well, I looked in the Wall Street Review, and I looked at these three, and like, I want to find their steps. This tool will give you the steps that they take to get to a decision. How's this helpful? Well, if the client says, I just go on my gut, then I'm going to say, well, it's a good thing that you and I get along so well. Like, it feels like we have some great rapport already. Doesn't this feel great? Hey, what can I do to help you? How can I make the biggest impact for you? Let's take care of this right now. It feels good. And if they say, I read everything under the sun, then I'm going to give them everything under the sun to read. If they say, you know, I'm a big fan on testimonials, I say, great. Where would you like me to send those testimonials? Would you like them? Would you like videos? Would you like, can I email them to you? How many would you like to read? People make decisions based on how they make decisions. And so if there's somebody who reads a bunch of stuff, like me, There's no way you're going to push me into buying a car in 5 minutes. No way. I'm going to read everything. It might take me a month. So if your client has that kind of a decision-making process and you're not honoring that decision-making process, there's no way you're going to get a signature. So the decision-making process questions are not in order. You don't have to use them all. They're just some examples of how to get insight on how this person makes decisions. How will you know when you find the right one? How did you decide on the last one? What did you do before that? For how long did you read the reviews before you decided? How many times did you read the reviews? Who else do you speak to about these decisions? Oh, my Uncle Fred's a real estate broker in Topeka, Kansas. I always check in with him. Great, let's call him and see what he has to say. What else do you need to do to convince yourself that it's the right decision for you? Well, we pray on it. Great. So the more we can find out about, number one, what values are driving that decision? And number two, what steps do they take to make that decision? The easier it is to deliver to this client. All right. Questions, comments, ahas, anything. There's a few examples in here on decision-making criteria, on decision-making process. So read those examples. I hope they're insightful. And then what's more important is at the very end of those two examples are a couple of questions for you to fill out. How would you present to client number one? How would you present to client number two? Those are very different clients. Meaning, when the client's different, the presentation is different. Otherwise, you're no better than a billboard. Different client means we adjust. Question.
Joel, Tim in Minneapolis.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, just a quick comment.
Please.
Taking this all in, I just summarized this lesson is about how to understand your client's values and how they make decisions so you can truly care for their needs and best assist them in making decisions within their comfort zone, which I think is
perfect.
So great. That's
perfect.
Good stuff.
Perfect. Great job, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you for the hour.
Yeah. By the way, we haven't even really gotten started yet. We're just kind of laying some ground rules and putting some context in place. We don't really start with any sort of technique for another week or two. We're just kind of getting warmed up. So, right
Hi,
on.
Joel.
Thank you, Tim. Yes.
Hi, Joel. This is Crystal from Detroit.
Hi, Crystal.
Hi. When you have on here, how would you present to client number one above, that meaning the example
Example number one. The example number one about the guy that wants to buy a car. They're both about cars.
Mm-hmm.
So example number one, the guy says, well, I read the reviews. The example number one is kind of me. I read the reviews. I read this. I read that. Well, how long did you know? Well, you know, I drove this. I drove that.
Mm-hmm.
That
okay.
I say, how do you present to client number one? It's example number one. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So if you want to present powerfully to example number with a client in example number one, what do? Give them lots of stuff to read. Show them the actuary table. Show them the insurance guidelines. Show them the resale value. Show them the maintenance record. Get them in a test drive. Like lots and lots and lots of information. And then example number two, how do you decide on the car? The guy said, well, I've always wanted a Corvette. My grandmother passed, left me money, and so I bought one. Okay, gut, quick, off the cuff, instinct. That's a different buyer. It's a different client. So the presentation's totally different. If you give that guy a ton of stuff or that woman a ton of stuff to read, they're not going to read any of it. Bury them in stuff, they won't read it. So what do? Speak to their gut. Speak to their instinct. Cool. All right, very quick recap. You have two pieces of homework. You have home play. So home play, rapport game number one, mirror and match everybody's rate of speech. If they talk really, really fast, talk really, really fast with them. If they speak slowly, slow down to their level. Get in sync as quickly as you can. If you want to take on the bonus game, the bonus round, which is the rapport destroying game, find a stranger one time for 10 or 15 seconds only. Do the opposite and then fix it and feel what happens. Notice what happens. And then as much as you can this week, any place you can get it in, try the decision, the core criteria. Determine core criteria. Ask your kids, right? They're doing their homework. Say, what's important to you about getting good grades? Whatever. What's important to you about going to the game on Friday? Right? Practice those as much as you can. And that's it. We are top of the hour. So thank you all for being here. Next week, we step in with a little more technique. And that's it. Hope you all have an See you all next week. Thanks, everybody. Go get them.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you,
Joe. Bye-bye, everybody. Yep, as usual, go make a difference in the world. We'll see you all next week.